But today is VE Day. The war is
the
over.
The crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Bailey Gifford. Capital at risk.
Hello and welcome to the Wealth Show podcast. My name is Sophie Downs and I'm joined today by two guests from CCLA Investment Management to discuss their global modern slavery benchmark. We have with us Dr. Martin Buttle, who leads the firm's Better Work strategy, as well as Dame Sarah Thornton, who you may recognise as having previously served as the UK Independent Anti-Slavery Commissioner. Thank you both for joining us. Now, the findings of this report are really quite shocking. But before we begin to delve into some of the details, Martin, if you could give listeners a brief introduction to the benchmark and how you're scoring companies on this.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. So the CCA Global Modern Slavery Benchmark looks at the top 100 companies by market capitalization that have a footprint in the UK. So they're either providing goods or services to the UK and therefore subject to the UK Modern Slavery Act. And it looks at their modern slavery and human rights related disclosures. It's quite a detailed framework, 62 points in all, 48 questions divided across five sections. So we look at the compliance with the Modern Slavery Act. So that's compliance with the law, conformance with the Home Office guidance. So that's statutory guidance that the Home Office publishes, and then whether companies are disclosing, finding, fixing and preventing modern slavery. It aligns with the UN Guiding Principles for Business and Human Rights and the OECD guidelines for multinational enterprises on responsible business conduct.
This is the first time the Global Modern Slavery has been launched. How does this compare to the UK ones you've done previously?
Yes, so we've actually been doing a UK benchmark, so looking at the top 100 UK companies by market capitalisation for 2 years now. And we're in the process this summer of doing the third one. And what I would say is that, the UK it's the UK Modern Slavery Act that forms the linchpin for this work. And UK companies are more familiar with this reporting requirement. But I think we are seeing the same sort of patterns with the global companies as we are seeing with the UK companies. We see that companies are broadly compliant with the law and they're broadly in conformance with the statutory Home Office guidance. And then where you see the performance falling off is in the find it, fix it, prevent it sections, with the fix it element, the remedy area, being the weakest area. And that is a pattern that we've seen in the global benchmark and in the UK benchmark. But actually, as we've been doing the assessments with the UK benchmark over a number of years, we are actually seeing companies improve. So we've seen 65 companies improve their score over the period that we've been analysing on the UK benchmark, and 35 companies go up a tier in the benchmark, which I think is testament to some of the hard work and engagement that we've done off the back of the work.
And also I think it just demonstrates the power of competition with these companies, that they can see how they're doing compared with their peers, and that is quite a motivator. I also think that the people who are responsible for disclosures in companies are able to use the benchmark with other people in the organisation and say, look, we are being assessed here and this is being published. We need to make sure that either we get our act together, or if we've got our act together, we're actually disclosing the good things we're doing. And that's definitely happening. And what we've found really interesting is, as Martin has just said, we're in the middle of doing the third UK benchmark at the moment, and we've just got all the preliminary scores in and we're just checking them and quality assuring them, and we'll be sending the scorecards out to companies in 2 or 3 weeks' time. And one of the fascinating things we've found as we reviewed the latest modern slavery statements that companies are disclosing and publishing is that I think it's 22 have mentioned our benchmark. So for us, that's a great performance indicator that actually we are making an impact on companies because they care about the fact that we are assessing them and they care about the fact it's published and they want to do better.
Mm-hmm. And since this benchmark has gone up, what's been the initial feedback here? Have companies responded to their scores?
Yes. So as part of the process of developing the benchmark, we were in touch with all of the companies we benchmarked. We gave them an opportunity to feedback. We heard from 23 companies and subsequently met 12 companies that are in our portfolio about their scorecards. And I can generally say that they have been interested and supportive of the findings, but it is too early to track whether there's been improvements. We will publish the benchmark again next year, and hopefully then we'll start to see improvements.
Mm-hmm. Some wealth managers might still ask, is this financially significant besides being a human rights issue? How would you respond to that?
Well, of course it matters to people and communities and therefore it's a human rights issue. But we would argue that it's also financially material because it poses a risk to businesses. Clearly, there's a reputational risk, so it can affect share price, but also it's an increasing legal risk, I think, to organisations. So, for example, earlier this year, the Court of Appeal ruled that over 20 exploited workers overseas could bring their case against Dyson in the UK courts. That poses a real threat and a real risk to businesses, so they need to get it right. But also, if you look across the globe, whether it's in the European Union, but also in countries such as Thailand, South Korea, Indonesia, expectations of responsible business, which have been voluntary historically, are becoming harder law. So I think for a whole host of reasons, it very much is materially risky to organisations and to companies, and they shouldn't be ignoring it.
Let's discuss some of the takeaways of the benchmark. Over 90% of companies said they had policies around modern slavery, but less than one in four actually found cases. So what's going on here? Is this a disclosures problem, or are companies really failing to identify modern slavery in their supply chains?
I think it's probably a mix of both. So if you look at the latest global slavery estimates, they would say there's nearly 28 million people across the globe in forced labour. So if you're looking at large organisations and large companies, there's probably exposure to forced labour risk. And so we would take the view that if you're not finding it, how hard are you really looking for it? So that's kind of the first point. But I think we've also come across a reluctance to disclose. So, for example, the company lawyer will say, we don't want to admit this sort of liability. They might be worried about reputation. They might be worried about potential impact on share price. We've also found when we speak to people who actually work in the human rights teams in companies, they don't want to disclose cases until they're finished, until they've identified the issue, addressed the problem, and given some sort of remedy or remediation for the workers. Now, that can take years, so they don't want to disclose too early. So there are practical reasons. But our position has been very much, you know, this is happening. You need to disclose it. And we've been very pleased to see, certainly in the UK benchmark, that the number of disclosures year on year has been increasing. And that's a good thing.
Looking to sectors specifically, financial services scored the worst. What's going on here?
So we've seen this issue about financial services, both in the UK benchmark and then this year in the global benchmark. And I think it reflects on the fact that many times companies focus on the upstream risks. So where are they buying goods and services from, rather than the downstream risks? And if you think about it, financial services, most of the risk is downstream. It's who you're lending money to. It's the companies in which you're investing. And I think it's important that our benchmark reflects that, but also that financial services appreciate that part of their responsibility is to reporting on the issues and the approaches they're taking on downstream risk as well as upstream risk. What was good to see, certainly in the UK benchmark again, that in our second year, financial services had improved quite significantly. And some of that was down to the fact they were talking more about what they were doing in terms of their downstream risks, how they were addressing issues where they had investments or in their loan book, for example.
So there's still hope. Were there examples of where a company's public image didn't match their score on the benchmark?
Well, I think rather than focusing on negative stories, I would like to call out Cisco Systems as a tech company that scored really highly in the benchmark. In fact, they were the top scoring company. And as a company that develops and installs tech hardware, they're exposed to modern slavery risk in their supply chain, both in terms of the component manufacture and in terms of some of the raw materials that they're sourcing. But they scored really well because their disclosures were very transparent and clear and thoughtful about the risks that they face. The cases they had, and they did disclose cases of modern slavery of workers who'd paid recruitment fees to get jobs in their supply chains. And they talked about the actions that they'd taken to repay those loans and repay the money that the workers had paid to get those jobs. And they quantified the amount of money that they paid back on an annual basis. So we thought that was really a thoughtful approach, which explained their approach to remedy, and it was the best scoring company on the benchmark.
And besides Cisco Systems, were there any stand-up companies, either good or bad, that wealth managers should know about?
So I'd like to also look at the French luxury brand LVMH. So they actually ranked tier 4 in our benchmark, which at first glance undercuts their sort of image as a luxury brand. The issue with companies like LVMH, LVMH in particular, is that they're a group and they have multiple maisons under the LVMH brand. And for one reason or another, they've decided to report only at subsidiary level. And because they have 75 subsidiaries, many of them are not reporting very well, and so that really did reflect poorly on their score. But it should be noted that LVMH as a company has had significant modern slavery and labour exploitation risk stories in the past year, you know, with its Italian Dior subsidiary and with the Loro Piana subsidiary, where there has been subcontracting of work to factories where workers have been exploited, and also in the Moët Hennessy supply chain in the Champagne region of France, where there's exploitation of migrant workers. So this is a company that does have significant modern slavery risk in its supply chain, and I think the fact that it reports at subsidiary level rather than at group level, it indeed undercuts their image of where you might expect them to be.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned tier 4 there. It might be worth just outlining the tier system that you've got.
Oh, yes. So in the benchmark, we rank the companies in 5 tiers. So with the top tier being those that are leading on human rights and really pushing the agenda forward, and with those in the bottom tier 5, really unsatisfactory disclosures.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about how Wealtham should be engaging with this. Is it a case of asset managers simply dropping the names that are failing to meet some of these standards, or is this about improvement?
So I think we would expect wealth managers to engage with this and asset managers to engage with this framework. We don't think that divesting from companies is necessarily the right way to tackle these issues. We think that engagement is really important because if you divest from a company on the basis of poor performance, then there's no opportunity to try and drive improvement. And we believe that, you know, one of the things that we strive for is to engage with companies to drive improvement.
Bearing that in mind then, what questions should fund firms be asking companies about their modern slavery risks?
So we've provided data for investors to use in their engagements with portfolio companies. What it means is they've got specific information about areas of strength and areas of weakness. It's also got information about their performance compared with their peers. And as we do these benchmarks year on year, there'll also be performance over time. So is there continuous improvement or are things rather plateauing? So from my personal experience over the last 3 years or so with CCLA Investment Management, taking part in those stewardship conversations with portfolio companies, it's so much better if you've got hard data on which to base the conversation. And not only to identify and explore what might be going well and what might be going wrong, but also year on year can hold people to account, hold companies to account about their promises to improve. So I on a personal level, have found it hugely valuable. But we would hope that all investors would find the benchmark data really useful in that kind of accountability relationship that they have with their portfolio companies.
And as a final question, what's the one thing you'd urge wealth firms to do differently on the back of this benchmark?
Well, first of all, I think we'd want wealth management and your readership to understand that modern slavery, forced labour and labour exploitation is more prevalent than you might expect, that it will be in the supply chains and global operations of many companies. And it's both a human rights issue and a material concern for those businesses. And there's growing regulation requiring companies to undertake mandatory human rights due diligence. So I think wealth managers can use the benchmark and use it to speak to their funds and managers about what they're doing to tackle the issue in their portfolios. As investors, we can play a really potentially transformational role in tackling this horrible human rights abuse. And I think it's on us to drive that forward.
Well, that's a very good note to end on, I think. Thank you very much for joining me today. You've been listening to the Wealth Show podcast. See you very soon.
But today is VE Day. The boys
the newly crowned queen waves from the Belt.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.